seem happy there. I hope happy anyway. Can we go ahead and call the roll call, Natalie?
Mm-hmm. Archer.
Here.
Wrong.
Present.
Bartels.
Here.
Gavaris.
Present.
Haynes.
Here.
Mayo.
Here.
Walter.
Here.
Donaldson. Is on mute.
But he's here. We can see him. There's yep. Dave. Okay, just a couple of things. This is our first Zoom meeting. I know everybody's been through them, but I figured I'd go over a couple of things. One, if I step away, I just want to let everyone know. I have a sick puppy who needs to go out constantly, so I may just step away to let her out the door. So I apologize if I step away from the camera. Also,
Ken's right there. What do you mean? You have a sick puppy that's got to go out.
Well, that's a blast in the past, Dave.
Of course, now they're going to start barking. Excuse me one second.
Just for the edification of the folks who were not here back then, in 2012, Dave referred to me in a press release as an inexperienced Republican attack puppy. You're on mute, Lynn.
You're muted.
Still muted.
There. Okay.
There it is.
They were on cue, so they were showing you what could happen during the meeting.
It's all good.
Yes, it is. Also, when we're not talking, most folks are on mute. That helps keeping background noise. Also, for the record, and for anybody else who's on the phone, audio is helpful to identify yourself when you're speaking, so if you wouldn't mind doing that. And we'll try and be clear on motions and votes just so everything's recorded. So with that, why don't we get into this? Can I get a motion to approve the minutes of the March 10th and March
18th?
Second?
8 seconds.
So Ken?
I moved it. Eve seconded it.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Resolution 131. Authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature into an agreement with Ulster County Soil and Water. This is to execute an agreement in the amount of $91,500 to be expended towards associated costs with the operation of Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District. Move.
I'll move it for discussion. Ken.
Eve, second.
Second. Ken.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, would like to make a motion that we postpone this resolution for the time being. I'm going to be making a motion to reconsider on all the contracts that we passed last month, and I think that we should refer them back to the Ways and Means Committee to have a discussion on what we can and can't move forward with the current budget constraints. And I don't think that we should move forward on these two until we get everything back and we can have discussions amongst ourselves on what's vital to move forward on and what's not.
Tracy?
Thank you. I'm open to that. I just want to make sure that we're reaching out to each of these organizations so that they understand that it's... that if it is that we're having those conversations, that we're having the conversations across the board, that it has to do with budget constraints, that, you know, if the money's there, et cetera, et cetera, just so that it's not operating in a vacuum and it doesn't get away from us and get reported out as if we're just canceling funds.
Before we have too deep of a discussion on it, somebody should probably second it if it's going to get seconded.
I'll second it, Heidi.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Madam Chair. I tend to agree with you, Tracy. I think that's something that we should definitely do. I thought it was premature to do before, you know, we make the decision as a collective that's what we want to do. But I definitely think that we should reach out to them to let them know that the funding isn't being taken away. But we're going to have some serious discussions, and I think some of these organizations that we end up funding are going to have to come back with a plan for less.
Any other comments? Eve?
So when, just so that we have the full story, when would we be having this other kind of discussion? Because I think if we're reaching out and saying this, I think we should have some kind of plan.
Well, Ken?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the, you know, just so everyone knows, you know, because we haven't met as Ways and Means, Legislator Archer and I and leadership have had these discussions with the county executive's office. The state budget splits the budget year for funding for municipalities and counties, among other things, into three separate time periods. You know, the governor refers to them as pandemic adjustment periods. The first period is the month of April, the second period is May and June, and the third period is July through the end of the year. I would be hard-pressed to make any firm decisions prior to at least the commencement of the third pandemic adjustment period, because I think that that's when you're going to have the best idea on where some of the, you know, where some of the cuts are going to come down. I think many of the cuts are going to come down in the first two pandemic adjustments because, you know, we're still on pause until right now, at least May 15th. I think that we all can infer that it's going to go longer than that. And I think that that's when the state is going to see the largest amount of a reduction in revenues, as well as the county receiving, you know, sort of the same, you know, commensurate reduction in revenues. So I don't think that we're going to have a good enough idea on where we're at financially as a county until after at least July. Most of these contracts are reimbursement. Some of them have some of the money coming up front, but most of the contracts are reimbursement, and a lot of the monies are paid in the third and fourth quarters. Correct me if I'm wrong, Amber and Natalie, on that. But, you know, a lot of the organizations, I think, come back to us in the fall for a lot of their reimbursements, so... I don't think it's an emergency for us to do them immediately.
Amber, you want to confirm that?
A select amount are quarterly payments, and some are paid at the end of the year, once
right.
all of their work is completed.
Which ones are they?
Don't Be a Monster is at the end of the year. Awareness is at the end of the year. Cornell Cooperative is quarterly. Family of Woodstock is quarterly. Trying to think of who else there is.
Libraries.
DRC is quarterly. Libraries is once a year, and they usually want it immediately.
Right, for their, you know.
What about UPAC and... Artsmith Hudson.
UPAC is quarterly. Artsmith Hudson usually wants it before June or July.
Okay, so we have some discussion to have with regards to this. Dave, you had something?
Yeah, I mean, this first one is the soil and water are sitting on large reserves, so I mean, I don't think they're going to be earned at this point. I think, you know, this one can easily be put off. And then you have the next one that's on there is the Dispute Resolution Center, which is basically, it's actually the CASA program. I did have conversations with the director of that because we moved over to the Dispute Resolution to run the CASA program, I believe, was it 2 years ago, Mark, or 3 years ago? Mark, do you remember?
Yeah, it was two or three, one of those.
Yeah, 2 or 3 years ago, we moved over because, you know, CASA was having trouble keeping a director because they just weren't paid all that well, and they have to, they're the ones that organize all the CASA volunteers and, you know, do the training. So the training still needs to be done, but I'm making the assumption that training has been put off because a lot of the courts and such have been put off. So I would assume that they would be able to probably put it off a little bit, but it's not something that I would support cutting unless they're able to actually do their mission due to the fact that you know, the courts have been somewhat suspended, so therefore they are not doing the training. So the family courts have not appointed members to actually serve as the court-appointed special advocates for the children yet. So that's the last conversation I had with the director. So I would assume that this would be able to be, you know, put off for the month, but it's something that I believe it would be foolish for us to put it off much longer, because all they have to do is keep one child at a placement in the States is $140,000 a year. So,
Steve? So, I mean, it seems like a lot of these have slightly different nuances in terms of when the payment is, how serious it is to stop. Is there a way, I don't know if next week is too soon, but, like, can we just actually have the time to take the chunk of them and with information that we need to know and decide whether we're going to be regrouping on them in July or September? But I just sort of feel like they're all somewhat different.
Ken? You're on mute, Ken.
You're on mute.
Sorry. I totally agree with that. And that's why I think that we should, you know, postpone them all in committee. I mean, we can revisit them as soon as next month. I don't think that we can do it next week, because we're not going to have all of them before us next week. You know, we have to go to our legislative meeting, do a motion to reconsider, and then we'll get them all back as a block. But I definitely agree. That's my reason for wanting to postpone them all, you know, or refer them all back to Ways and Means, rather than try and make decisions on the fly, because they are all different and they all have different nuances. And, you know, some of them we may find more important than others during this pandemic.
Tracy?
Aren't some of them still held in programs? Programs didn't move all of them out last week. They only moved the one out. So Vicky's holding up her finger that two are still in programs. So we just want to remind ourselves of that. I mean, I agree with what Eve is suggesting, what Ken's saying. I don't know. We could even have a special meeting to discuss this. That could be a joint Ways and Means programs meeting, or however you want to work it, just so that we actually can work through all of them in greater detail. But I don't think that's going to happen within 1 week.
I don't either. And I think, as Ken has highlighted, these are the ones that are before us. Remember, last month we approved a number of them. So if we're going to do this, we're best looking at everything and not one-offs. So I do think it calls for a special meeting to be convened and looked at everything, if in fact we reconsider the ones already approved, which is what you're recommending on the floor, correct, Ken?
Yes.
Well, just so you make it clear, the CASA one actually passed the legislative programs because of the necessity and the problem with, once we come out of this, the courts are going to be moving kind of quickly on dealing with, you know, children in the courts and through family court. So that's was the understanding when it moved out of legislative programs. We discussed it at length, and that's why that one moved out. The others did not. Just as a point of information.
Okay, so on, go ahead, Ken.
Trace had her hand up first, I think.
Oh, I didn't catch it. Sorry, Trace.
Oh, Ken, you could go, but thanks.
I think we're probably going to say the same thing. You know.
My couple questions were, one, when does CASA get paid? And two, I think, based on your earlier comment, Chairman Donaldson, it could wait the month to have the comprehensive conversation.
Yeah, it might be able to, but I mean, like I said, it moved out of there because a number of the members were concerned about, you know, if it holds up anything. We didn't want that to happen. I don't think it would, only because of the logistics of the courts right now.
Does Amber have the information of when they get paid? And how?
They're quarterly.
Amber?
Quarterly? She said quarterly.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Okay. Ken, did you have something?
I mean, I was just going to say that, you know, I respect the position of legislative programs in deciding that they want this one to move forward and then not moving forward others. I think that we need to have a holistic conversation because, you know, there's going to be, I'm sure, organizations that we cut out the funding entirely, but I think that we're going to, you know, I mean, we've got a $30 to $40 million budget gap. I think that all of the organizations are going to have to, you know, show us some sort of a way that they can do with a little bit less in order to, you know, try and help us find a way out of the mess. That's why I think we need to do it all together.
Steve, so just in light of that, if we're going to regroup up in next month, is there something specific we're asking these organizations to do to follow up with what Ken was just talking about, making suggestions for lower amounts or something? Are we going to prepare them for this?
Clearly we're going to have to, and I will reach out to Jim and see, I mean, obviously they should be part of a joint meeting. They have a lot of input into this process, and we'll come up with a structure. I think I've had some conversations with folks. I think Jim has as well. People are anticipating this. They recognize the situation and what this means. They're already asking, what does it mean? And I think that, and my conversations with a couple of folks has been, look, we, you know, we're stepping into the unknown, and at this time, I think it's prudent for us to step back and reassess and look what absolutely needs to be done in light of the pandemic, what we can hold off on, and listen, if worst case scenario doesn't pan out by end of year, we can always take a second look at things, but I think for now, it's the prudent course of action. Okay, on the... If there's any no other questions.
Yeah, I do have one comment.
Okay.
I understand where people are coming from, but on the other hand, for instance, the city of Kingston actually increased the funding to some of the groups that, you know, help out the needy. I mean, we have to look at those angles also. We can't just turn around and say, well, we got to deal with everybody the same way, because we shouldn't be dealing with everybody the same way. Some we need to take forward to. I certainly understand that, you know, we don't necessarily have to give UPAC your $25,000, even though, I mean, I love UPAC and I go there, but that is a lot different than helping out needy somewhere. It's a totally different, you know, organization and a totally different need. So that's what my concern is. I don't want to see us get caught up in the idea, well, everybody has to feel the pain equally or things of that nature, because there's many people that are feeling a lot of pain, and the only way you're going to deal with it is if you're actually funding those that are funding the need. So I have more of those that, like, for instance, the CASA program that is dealing with children that are in, you know before family court.
I agree. I mean, the whole point of looking at everything all at once is, though, that we can have that discussion and make informed decisions about those programs that have a real need and that's been compounded by the pandemic. So I think we're on the same page, and I think having the conversation would be helpful. Okay, on the postponement, all in favor? Excuse me? We have to vote on the postponement, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah, we're voting on the postponement of the first resolution, Dave.
Yeah.
Okay.
All in favor? Is there anyone opposed? Motion passed. Postponement passed. Okay, on resolution 142, this is the resolution.
Lynn, Mark has a question.
Okay. Mark, go ahead.
You had said in your email that you were going to take 171 out of order, and that's the only reason Don's here. So,
let me just finish 142, because I think that we were
going to
talk about it, and then we'll go to that. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks for reminding me. Okay. Resolution 142, this is the COSMA, the resolution.
I'll move it.
Second?
I'll second it, Tracy.
Okay.
Ken? I make a motion, as we did with the resolution 131, that we postpone this for a month, or until our next meeting, I should say.
Eva second. All in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Anybody opposed?
I'll be opposed to it just for a purpose.
Okay.
That's fine. The reason I don't have a real problem with it is because the next meeting is rather quick. It's coming up pretty fast, so it's not really a full month of a postponement.
Okay. So
actually, hold on a sec.
Ken?
I said to our next meeting, our next meeting's next week.
I meant
our first meeting next month, whether it be a joint meeting or yeah. I just want to clarify that for the
next monthly meeting.
Okay, is everyone clear? Do we have to take the vote again, or are we good?
I think we're good. It was just a clarification.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to yes, Tracy. You're on mute.
Sorry. Can we just, you'll stay in touch with us regarding the possibility of a special meeting prior
yes.
to the next normal Ways and Means meeting? Because I think
yes.
the next normal Ways and Means meeting could be insane if we're doing all of these as well. So.
Yeah, no, I'm going to reach out to Jim, who I see is on the line, and we
yeah.
will come together and see when we can schedule a meeting to sit down and discuss this.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to take a resolution out of order now that we have Don here. This is resolution 171. This is the resolution that approves the contract with Central Hudson in the amount of $137,500 for the installation of upgraded natural gas and electric services to the county's building located in the old Tech City. I'll take a motion.
I'll move it. Ken.
Ken, you had something?
I moved it.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant right.
Second.
Any discussion? Tracy?
I wasn't really prepared to lead off the discussion, but so, you know, we've talked about this a lot and the need to make the connection for the property as separate from the potential use of the property, which we've heard about a lot of possibilities. One of my concerns is that, and I do have some questions for Don regarding this. One of my concerns is that in the same way that we're looking at the two resolutions ago, we're looking at programs that we're gonna reevaluate in terms of the expense in light of the pandemic and the blow to our budget. It's not so much for me a question of if we need to do this, but of when we need to do this. And one thing that I'd like to know is, have we spent any other money regarding this? I'm gonna ask you a few, Don. Have we spent any other money regarding this? What other contracts are in the works in terms of RFPs for beyond just, I know we're talking about the connection, but we're talking about the connection because we're talking about greater things with the property. And lastly, has anyone run the numbers or the expectations of what the maintenance costs are going to be once the building is de-winterized, even if it remains vacant?
So, a lot of questions there. In short, we're following procurement law on everything we do in terms of contracts. Mark might be able to speak to that a little bit better than I can, but everything might not require an RFP for what we're looking for. FEMA typically requires three quotes as a bare minimum. We don't know if FEMA will reimburse funding for this building at this time. We're looking into that as well. We are doing a lot of interior work in-house labor. We don't have any real expenses on the books at this time. So the Central Hudson contract would be the first major expense for this building to get going forward.
I'll just add to that I think that we've touched on this in other meetings, talking about some of the other ancillary costs that were, getting the HVAC up and running and the elevators fixed and other things. And I know they've gotten multiple quotes on some of those contracts so that they're ready to go if necessary. Some of the electrical work and the plumbing work. And I think we gave a quote all in somewhere in the 220 range.
So
with
I'm gonna
Central Hudson contract on top of that. And then just to answer Tracy's first question, the maintenance cost, we did reach out to Central Hudson and asked what the cost would be to have the building in various states. And so the electric and the gas in basically an empty building looks like it'll run approximately about $100,000 a year for electric and gas. And when it was kind of up in the Bank of America heyday and all the computers were running and everything else, it was about the $400,000 range for electric and gas carrying costs.
Lynn, Eve's got her hand up.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Eve.
Thanks. Sorry. Well, I guess, Tracy, before I move to a slightly different side of this, you want to follow up with anything? Because I'm going to sort of take it off of total amount.
I mean, I don't, not specifically, I just, my research said about $100,000 a year for the vacant building based on the square footage that you were telling us that the building was. And therein sort of lies my concern that if we don't need it for what we originally expected we might need it for, and we start down this road, that, you know, I think we need to be looking at this as an expense just like every other expense, including the contracts that we're looking at right now. I mean, this is money that we very likely aren't going to have, so we're going to be making some very difficult decisions down the road. And I know that we're going to need to make this connection eventually, which is, again, why I'm saying, for me, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And I'm not sure that I'm comfortable with this timing right now, given all the information that I've gotten. But Eve, you can now move on.
Yeah, I agree. I think my challenge is the fact that it has now COVID attached to it. Because from our conversations that we had last week, I'm still not compelled to believe that we are going to necessarily need this. We were told by the hospitals that that step down was not a part of the culture of the care provision, that our experience in New York City is that they weren't being utilized. I'm not quite sure what's happening in the high school, but we know there's potentially space in the other hospitals. We know that there are extreme, you know, three levels of likely extreme risk, low level, but it seems like even if the numbers surge, that it looks like we're probably okay. And so I just want to feel compelled that this is something that's really truly necessary right now in order to respond to COVID, because that's not the feeling I got from the meeting last week.
This is Evelyn. May I add something and respond to that?
Please.
I just want to emphasize that at the base, this is about responsible ownership of this building, which we took into our ownership. The Central Hudson people told us that the contractor who did the temporary fix job on the current power system was stunned that it was still working. It could fail at any time, and the building would lose power, and the damage to the building could be more costly than what we're doing now. So we see this at the base as being about, we own this thing, we have a responsibility to take care of it and to not make the situation over there worse. It's not, Eve, I agree, it's not clear that we're going to need this for COVID response, but having the building properly supplied with electricity and gas and ready to be used gives us flexibility, whether it's to, whether, you know, God forbid we need it for COVID response, situations change, or whether we can use it for flexibility space for county facilities. It gives us the chance to use it and potentially to sell it and have revenue from that. So it's just a necessary first step to be able to do anything with it in the future, and it's also is preventing what could be a worse situation unfolding if the power through the Tech City power plant fails at any moment.
Dave?
Well, yes. Also, what has happened with that building, it has had no maintenance for almost 3 years. And a building sitting there for that long, it starts to become, really dangerous in that it could cost, as Evelyn's pointing out, a lot more money to deal with later on. And I mean, we had a conversation with the leadership, or we had a conversation with the county executive, and he understands at this point it's most likely not going to be used for COVID, but it's still, the property has to be maintained. And if we don't, as they're pointing out, we could end up spending a hell of a lot more later on. So my mindset is, it's our building, we have to take care of it. Not only that, but there are possibilities. Right now they're be talking about the idea of the number of homeless going up. If we have that building open, it's almost like a warehouse in most of the building, and it can be used for something of that nature if you need to. I wouldn't suggest that we try to sell it at this point, because I don't know what we would get for it. I don't think the numbers would be right. I would be better to hold on to it, but we can also put it out for a bid for rentals or things like that. If companies really want to use something of this nature, it's a nice building otherwise. It just needs repairs, and we have to act on it. And I think this is the time. I certainly understand it's like, just like with many of the other things. We can put off maybe giving soil and water money. We can put off, certain things. But so some things you just can't put off. You've got to deal with it when you got to deal with it. And I think at this point, this is the building we're going to have to deal with, whether, we like the idea or not.
Ken?
Thank you. Just to echo some of the things that Dave said and disagree with them a little bit. I think that the number one priority for the county has to be to get this building back on the market so it can be on the tax rolls again. It's not just for us, but it's also for the town of Ulster, the school district. It is a valuable piece of property, and I believe strongly that we need to invest in this property, especially at this point, because I don't know if it was brought up or not. I don't remember it, but we've been discussing it for a little while. That Central Hudson is covering part of the cost as a reimbursement, something like $60,000, Mark? Yep, Mark's signaling yes, that's about $60,000. So one of the things that we have going for us is that Central Hudson doesn't have a lot of work going on right now, and if we were able to get them in there doing this work now, I think that they're more likely to give us that reimbursement than if we waited to do it. So I understand Tracy's comment that, we need to be watching every cent. And I think that this is part of watching every cent, is making sure that we invest in what is now our property so we can get it back in the tax rolls. Because let's not forget that the reason the county owns this is because Mr. Ginsburg didn't pay his taxes forever. So I think we strike while the iron's hot, personally.
Tracy?
Two questions. The $60,000 that we've heard about with Central Hudson in terms of a reimbursement, is that included in this number, this $137,000, or is it going to be $60,000 less than $137,000?
Well, it's $137,000, but that's a usage reimbursement.
Can you explain what that means?
It means as we used natural gas or electricity, that $60,000 gets credited back to the county.
Okay, so it's $137,000, and then once we start having bills, they're going to credit us $60,000 worth of bills.
Right.
Which, I'm not sure that is time sensitive, because I'm sure Central Hudson is going to be happy to have a big customer back on their rolls. But the other question I have is actually for Evelyn. Evelyn talked about if the power goes out in there. Can you explain because I thought the building wasn't powered right now, so I'm confused what that comment was.
The building is getting some power from the Tech City power system, so, you know, there's emergency power in there. Mark can probably say more about how much, but the issue is that, you know, IBM had their own power plant, and they had the entire campus wired together, and that power plant was built, I don't know, in the 40s, and has been steadily failing. Central Hudson has said they will not go in there. Because they think it's so dangerous. And it evidently had, I think it was 4 connections to the campus, and 3 of them, well, all 4 of them failed. 3 of them failed. 1 of them was literally duct taped back together, essentially, in electrical terms, as an emergency fix. And that was, I want to say, in 2017. And like I said, Central Hudson said that they were astonished that that temporary fix that was supposed to buy Ginsburg some time so he could have it fixed properly, which he never did, that they were shocked that that was still operating. So we would have, instead of almost no power to the building, we would have literally zero power to the building if that were to fail.
Yeah, right now, currently, there's emergency lights, there's things that is taking power onto that west side of the campus. The Bank of America building has some power running into it, and it's just getting it from the east side of the campus, which, you know, currently we don't even have a way to pay Mr. Ginsburg for currently, nor do I. But
just for clarification, so that power plant that Evelyn's talking about is powering the east side of the campus,
yes,
as well, even in the state that Evelyn's describing.
Yes, and so if that fails, then all of those tenants will need a place to go as well, just so we're all aware. And potentially, you know, I don't know that this will make much of a difference, but getting us off of that, our small load off of that that kind of transformer area would probably be helpful to that area as well.
Heidi, then Eve.
Yeah, a question for Don. Once we have the utility of the electricity moved over to the Bank of America building, are we still reliant on any other utilities coming from that other side, from the east side?
Mark, I'm not 100% positive, but I don't believe so, because I think the water's coming off the main, right? It's not coming from the east side.
I don't believe we're reliant at all.
From an ownership perspective, does this make us, you know, self-sufficient?
Yes, it would give us our own meter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm completely compelled that this is important and somewhat timely. I guess I feel like in this environment right now where we're talking about potential cuts to lots of services and other programs, what I'm feeling is, and a month is not, it's not maybe not even a whole month from now, when that plan to sort of have that special meeting and look at all of this, my feeling is that this, since that the resolution should be corrected to not have COVID on it, so it doesn't have that sense of COVID urgency, and that we just look at it along with all of the other ones, is my feeling. And I think that when we do that, we're going to find that several of them we want to really respond to sooner, and others will delay, but I don't see how this necessarily rises more importantly than some of the services that are going to have to be cut.
Ken?
Thanks, Lynn. You know, to Legislator Walter's point, I agree that we should amend the resolution to take COVID off of it. I really do. I think it might have not been the best way to frame the discussion on this. I understand the county executive, you know, his point when this started, but I think it's become obvious that we're very unlikely to for that purpose at this point. But I don't necessarily agree with lumping it in with the contract agencies, because it's an entirely different it's an entirely different piece of county government. This is a capital project to repair one of our buildings. These other contracts that we're holding off are contracts for agencies that apply to us for funding, you know, sometimes through legislators, sometimes, you know, on a regular basis. I think that you're talking about, you know, apples and mid-sized cars, you know, when you're trying to lump them together. I don't I don't think that we should think about capital projects that we're doing on a regular basis to either improve our roads, bridges, buildings as the same as the funding for UPAC or the funding for the Maritime Museum.
Tracy?
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think when you talk, Ken, about bridges and roads, we're talking about public safety, and I agree with Legislator Walter, you know, in the spirit of, I think, the way that she meant it, not to lump a capital project with funding for an arts program, but to say that we're going to have really hard decisions. I mean, we may have to let people go. You know, we may have to cut services, not legislative program services, but real services. And so when you start down a path right now to, it's one thing to just make the connection, the $137,000 connection, then you start the meter, then you start looking at the problems, then you start with the sprinklers and the elevators and everything else, and who knows what that cost is, even as we're thinking about what people's jobs might have to go, what services might have to go. And that's my concern, that I don't right now have a full picture, and this is a new thing, and I'm not sure if, as Legislator Walter said, 1 month would make such a negative difference to the connection to Tech City, given that if it's not urgently needed for COVID, and on the other side, if it gets us the time to really have a big picture look of what we're looking at.
And I'd like to just add on to that. I think any time you take a building of this age and start to do repairs, there are always unforeseen repairs that are not anticipated, that are going to cost us a lot more money. And a time where we need to be very conservative where we are spending money, I think it is one of those topics that, and I think this was the spirit of what Eve was talking about as well, that it merits a more lengthy discussion and a fuller understanding. Right now we know the electric's 137, and yes, we need to maintain a building, but I think that before we spend any other money on this building, we have no understanding of the recovery of this economy and when this building potentially could be put on the market to be sold, and what carrying costs we really will have just to preserve the investment. So I think it warrants a more lengthy discussion, because when we started this discussion, it was to be a step-down facility, and now it has many other things. Mark?
I've been on all these conversations. I've been on the leadership calls with the hospitals. I think there's a lot there. I don't think we're out of the water as far as knowing what this is going to need, knowing what in a month and a half our need's going to be. And moving forward with this contract takes time after the contract is in place to get us to the spot where we, you know, if we wait until May, then this work is not done until July and August. I mean, we've talked about various different uses that aren't only step-down facility uses, but 1,000 people went through Javits this week, and to say that step-down facilities aren't used at all, I think that I wasn't going to say anything on the call with the doctors the other day, but we don't know where we're going to be at yet, and we don't know what a second peak is going to look like, and I'm just concerned that as we start to push this off, we have Central Hudson lined up to do the work now. I don't think we can guarantee that they're going to refund our $60,000 or reimburse us $60,000 in the future. They want to do the work now where they're not busy. And so I am concerned, and I just want to go on the record that I would be concerned pushing it off by a month.
Ken?
Thanks, Liz.
And Dave. And
then you know, just to sort of piggyback on what Mark said, you know, and honestly, I think to piggyback a little bit on what you said, you know, I wouldn't be in favor if there were five contracts for us today, one for plumbing, one for the elevators, because you're absolutely right. Buildings of this age, once you start getting into the walls, you're going to find problems that once we as a government find, we need to address. You know, I don't think, though, that we should put off doing the electric and gas work because of what we might find down the road. I think that that's something that, regardless of the use, and again, I want to, again, go on record in this meeting and say I think that use as a step-down facility may have been a poor choice as a way to frame the discussion on doing this work. I think that a lot of focus is being put on that now, even though it's unlikely to be needed. You know, as that very unlikely, I would say almost entirely unlikely. I say almost. But I do think that the work needs to be done, and we're better off to do it now. Today's dollars are always cheaper than tomorrow's dollars. And quite frankly, to Tracy's point about, you know, this could mean a job or et cetera, you know, it could mean a job or 10, depending on how long this stays off the tax rolls. You know, that's something that, you know, that's something that we have to consider, is that aside from the fact that we've been making the town and the school district whole for taxes on this building for years, now it's off the tax rolls and nobody's receiving the tax dollars for that, which affects every other taxpayer in the county, not to mention the county budget. So to me, I think that we need to start moving in the direction of improving our property that we now own, in order, you know, to invest for the taxpayers.
Dave, and then Tracy.
If we take a look at this, regardless of what you like or what you wish could happen, the reality is we have to do this building. We have to do the electric and gas in this building, whether we want to do it now or you want to wait a year. If you, the longer you wait, the more problems you'll end up having. In my mind, you know, just putting it off is not an answer. It's got to be done. And I certainly understand as we get there, we may have to spend more money, but it's got to be done. The electric and the gas has to be done. Now, they framed it with the COVID idea, and I like Ken and others, know, feel pretty sure that it's not going to be used for that. Now, we could take that out of the resolution, but that would be kind of foolish, too, because right now, we're looking at the idea of trying to get some kind of reimbursement. I doubt if we will, but at least we have the ability to try to get that some kind of reimbursement from FEMA, which you're not going to have otherwise. The longer you put it off, the less chance that you're going to get that any kind of FEMA money, but I don't believe you're going to get any of it anyway, because it's a national-wide FEMA emergency, and they're going to be quite... you know, they're going to be looking at things with fine-tooth comb, who's going to get reimbursed. So I don't think you're going to get reimbursed, but there's an outside possibility. And my mindset is, I think we need to move this forward and move on to the next resolution.
Tracy?
Yeah, I mean, I hear Ken on the tax issue, and I think it's a... it's a very worthwhile point, but to the issue of, and Ken, you said you know, you agreed with me in talking about if all those other contracts were before us. Well, we heard at the start of this discussion that a lot of those contracts may or may not even come before us. They're going to be RFPs that are set out and let out for, you know, $50,000, under $50,000 here and there for plumbing and all the things we, I mean, we've been in those conversations about plumbing, about sprinklers, about elevators. So if there was some kind of assurance that they weren't moving on forward with the building, on starting to put money into it beyond this connection, I think it would be a different discussion. But I feel like we're having both conversations simultaneously. We're having the conversation about getting the building ready for use, whether it's for COVID or for a homeless crisis. And we're having the conversation about needing to make the connection to maintain the building, as there, as it's like two separate conversations happening simultaneously.
Ken?
Thanks. I won't keep belaboring the point. I think that, you know, this has the chance to keep going around in circles, but I understand what you're saying about the fact that the executive's office and the purchasing director can sign off on contracts under $50,000 for all of the things that we maybe wouldn't support moving forward on at this moment. But, I mean, due respect, this is the only one that's before us, and they could do that whether we renew the electric and gas or not. You know, so to me, while I understand your point, and I would hope that the executive, as he's been, I think, working pretty well with the leadership during this crisis, I would hope that he would, and Mark, you can pass, and Evelyn can pass this along to him, I would hope that he would have the courtesy to have that discussion with us before he started signing off on contracts. But to me, I mean, you know, right now we have this contract in front of us. I think that's what we have to focus on, not what Pat could do on his own.
Okay, Tracy?
So can I ask a question then of Mark and Don? I mean, is there the intention to start moving forward on other contracts to upgrade and do more than just make the connection?
No, I mean, I think that there would be certain work that would potentially have to be done, again, just like to finish the connection, both, you know, going into the building, so there's some other electrical work that's outside of the Central Hudson contract, and to make the building safe, when they dewinterized it, they took all of the sprinkler heads off for the fire safety sprinklers, etc. I think as a publicly owned building, some of that work we would want to do, but we're not going to get the building ready to be a shelter or get the building ready to be a surge hospital without talking to you.
Is there a way, Mark, if you already anticipate, you know what things you're going to need to do once the electric connection occurs before it becomes a facility for whatever, can you share that information at least to phase one, this is what it looks like, and here's the other. I mean, I assume you guys have already put some sort of plan together with regards to this, and sharing that could go a long way.
Yeah, I think Pat has already stated that that would happen in leadership meetings.
Okay. Anybody else? Eve?
So, I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, but, and it may not pass, but I'm going to go back to my original feeling of, you know, that there's a sense of urgency was created around this. It was not necessarily accurate because it was tied with the COVID. Now I hear a sense of urgency for other reasons, although, you know, a lot of this is just a good timing because the former owner, you know, that it got passed through. I do feel more comfortable having more information about this and seeing the various different kinds of expenditures and impacts on our full budget that includes programs and includes this. And so I mean, I would like to make a motion to postpone this to our next month's meeting. Just put that out there.
Is there a second to the postponement?
I would second that.
Okay. All in favor of the postponement?
Yes.
And opposed?
I'm opposed.
I'm opposed. I'm going to abstain for purpose of appointment.
Okay. So on the resolution, all in favor?
You want to announce the vote on the postponement? I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have it, Amber?
I believe it's 5 in favor, 2 against, and 1 abstained.
On the postponement?
No, I'm sorry. I wasn't clear. I'm for postponement.
I think it was 3-4.
3-4. Thanks, Nip.
Oh, Lynn, you're opposed?
Yes.
Okay.
Wait, I'm confused. Who voted to postpone and who voted not to postpone?
Legislators Bartels and Walter.
I'm sorry, I'm confused. I am voting to postpone.
Legislators Archer, Bartels, and Walter voted yes to postpone.
Okay.
Legislators Donaldson, Ronk, Medino,
Haynes,
voted no to postpone. postponement, and then Legislator Gavaris abstained. So it would be 3 yes to postpone, 4 no to postpone, and 1 abstention. Correct?
So the postponement does not pass.
Sorry, I just want to make sure that we get it all clear, because the no are the ones that are the most important.
Yes, thank you. On the resolution as it stands, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
We're going to abstain again.
Tracy, what's your vote on this?
I'm telling you, I'm really struggling.
So was I, Tracy.
I think we need more time.
It's gotta be done.
More information. I'm opposed.
You're opposed. Okay, so 3 opposed, 1 abstention, and the remaining are approving 171. Okay, we'll go back to the agenda. Don, thank you for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Resolution fails.
Uh-oh, it's down.
If the vote count stays that way, we move forward. The resolution fails because Legislator Donaldson's in the room, which means that the quorum raises. We need 5 votes to pass it.
I see that.
Well, you wouldn't have, otherwise you would have 4.
Well, the issue is that the entire committee is in attendance, and under our rules, when the entire committee is in attendance, the chairman's presence raises the number required to pass. It raises quorum, you know, so if you were in the room and one of us were absent, you replace our vote. When you're in the room and all of us are here, and it raises quorum.
Let me try this. If I may. That's correct. And I'm just wondering, would it be best to get more, do you think there's time between now and next week to get information to get you comfortable before we vote on this?
Make a point right now. I'd like to make a point that what Ken is talking about, if I was not here, it would still fail because it would be 3-3 with 1 abstention.
With 1 abstention. It's the abstention is yet.
So, no, I mean, there's not much you can do. I mean, we know what the information is. I mean, I don't get the postponement in the first place because we know what the information is. You either understand that you have to move to this building or you don't. It's not going to change next week. It's not going to change a month from now.
Yeah, I'm just going to say I'm not going to have any more information by next week. That's not going to be possible.
I mean, if it would make a difference, I would postpone it to next week. I'm not in favor of postponing it to next month because to me there's not more information that's going to affect my vote on this in a month. And over the years, we have postponed countless resolutions for a month expecting more information, and the next month we just move forward on it. I think that it's important for us to move forward on this month.
Tracy?
Oh, I just leaned forward.
Oh, okay.
I'm struggling with this one. I'm being honest. Because I hear the arguments. I've been, particularly Legislator Ronk talking about the tax rolls and needing to get it back on the tax rolls and the marketability of the building and our responsibility as owners, which is not the conversation we've been having up until this day. We've been having a conversation about the utilization of the building for other purposes. And I am concerned about a money pit, but I'm struggling. It's a rare moment for me to be so torn.
Sorry.
Go ahead,
Do you want to go first, Evelyn?
If I may, I just want to address the COVID thing because I think that you all are right in looking at the situation now. It doesn't look like we are in immediate need of it, although, as Mark said, we have no idea what this epidemic is going to do next. I just want to say that that wasn't thrown in there as a justification. Things looked very different 3 weeks ago when we were thinking that we were really going to need to quadruple our hospital bed space in the county. And it was part of our agreement with the Kingston School District that the facility there was not a permanent one, that we were working on something that could be more permanent. And so whether you all feel that that's relevant now or not, it was not put in there lightly. It's just that the situation is rapidly changing around us.
Thanks, I appreciate that. I don't think when it was first put in there, I know for myself, I didn't think it was put there lightly at all. I think that's why we asked for more information last week, which for myself was very helpful. I'm more referring to feeling the sense of urgency, and whether if it was a COVID emergency, it's a very different story right now than if it's not. It's not to me a matter of I need information, I don't need information, I can just have it, and therefore I should just decide. I think it's really important to recognize that there are, as I said many times, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to have to be cut, and I think we need to really look at this all together. It's not a matter, I don't think anyone who, I don't want to speak for the other people who oppose, it is not a feeling like this isn't important. It's just that giving us the time. I think that in our current economic situation, I don't think that we're going to find a buyer that's knocking on the door tomorrow because everybody in the economy is struggling right now. So I'm just suggesting that the time that it takes between now and next month would allow us to look at all of these, look at the budget and the things that need to be cut all together. And I'll say to Chairman Donaldson that you make this very strong, compelling argument for some of the programs and why it's really important. And so I think that we just need to look at all of this together, which is why I'm not suggesting I'm against the whole thing. I'm just, this is why I suggest the postponement.
Dave?
But, you know, when we take a look at this, the COVID situation, I know when they first called me, when they first had the John Dover call me, in reference to the building and in reference to the COVID, and it was a conversation we had right off the bat was that the building had to be done anyway. We just got possession of the building not that long ago. So once you get possession of the building, you know you're going to have to deal with it, particularly since it's sat there for 3 years without, any maintenance in it. So the point is it's got to be done. Now, we can make the argument we're not going to use it for COVID, and we know we aren't, because when we set up the meeting with the doctors, I wanted to make sure it was clear with everyone that we had hospital beds that could be used. So, and I also wanted to make it clear when we talked to Pat, the county executive, that if he did anything other than this, we understood, in other words, I had a conversation with some of the people, the maintenance people, and they were pointing out you really have to get this done. You can't just keep putting it off. And the conversation was that along with the doctors that we knew we didn't have to use it, but it just happened to correspond with that. So, I mean, pointing out that, oh, we had the building, we have to do this anyway, and now we made the arguments for the COVID. So it didn't correspond, you know, because of the timing. But having said that, it still has to be done. And I understand, believe me, I understand. I'd love to put off a lot of stuff. I mean, I want to make sure that the need you're taken care of. I want to make sure that the least amount of people that would have to be laid off would be laid off. I mean, I understand that. But on the other hand, we own a building, and we have to do that maintenance part that has not been done. And as they pointed out, they do not know how long it's going to last on the emergency part of the electric. So to me, putting it off is not going to solve anything. I think it's a month from now, we're just going to be voting yes to do it because we really don't have a choice. Now, I wish I could say, yeah, we had a choice, but I don't see a choice.
Can I just have one question and then Eve? Mark, I've heard all this about, the the electrical is kind of cobbled together, so to speak. Is there a concern from a fire hazard perspective?
Yes. I mean, the New York Power Authority, I want to say it was 14 months ago, came down when we were first trying to relocate Farm Bridge, and they wanted to shut that other power source off completely. And they believed it was a fire hazard at the time. We asked them, because of the tenants that were there, to allow them to continue to operate that electrical work. But as you know, others have said that Central Hudson is surprised that it's still working. But once that switch fails, who knows what is going to happen with the electric, including there could be a catastrophic failure that could be a fire of some kind. I don't know.
So as a follow-up to that, Mark, hypothetically, this passes, how quickly would Central Hudson be in there making these changes?
That the next day. I mean, we're using in-house labor to trench and do everything. The DEC gave us a quick turnaround permit to trench through the bloom because they want this to happen now. So they would be in there essentially the next day.
Yes.
Okay, Eve, I'm sorry, you had a question.
And again, back to the point of we know everything we need to know. My challenge is with the word this, when this has to get done, is I'm actually not quite clear I know what this is. I mean, I know what this particular resolution is asking for, but I've heard repeatedly, and myself, I've owned an old house, is I don't actually have a full sense of the extreme cost, the middle cost, the lowest cost, all the other things that'll have to happen once this step happens. And I don't have a sense of what the larger picture is. And I don't know if we're talking hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I, you know, whether it's going to be the next resolution saying now this has to be done. So I think having, again, more information about the different elements that need to truly be done and beyond this one is useful information.
Ken?
I don't agree. This is a specific project to upgrade the utilities. When you're doing utility work, you don't worry about whether or not you're going to have to replace asbestos on your front porch. It's just not, it's not a comparable thing. It's not, the work to improve the utilities isn't going to affect all of the other things that you're going to need to do. Some of the internal work, the plumbing work, might affect or be affected by other things that you're going to need to do. But this contract is with Central Hudson for improving the utilities outside of the building. I do not agree that we should have a comprehensive look on everything that needs to be done in the building before we approve the improvements the gas line, the electric line. Those are things that need to happen regardless of if we did anything inside.
So having said all of this, I will agree to, I'm going to change my vote to supporting the electrical work with a caveat, Mark, and this is critical, Mark and Evelyn. You know, we have assurances from you. We're going to have a conversation. I think it would be quite meaningful to have a conversation with Ways and Means with regards to additional ideas for the building, additional work that you're doing before any contracts get signed with any plumbers, with any electricians. I think we really need to understand the full scope of what this is, because we're now going to have carrying costs. And again, until you start to tear things apart, you have no idea what other additional work is. And I think this is one of those kind of cash, money pit, thank you. Money pit that will come back to haunt us. And I think, I think it's important to get the electrical fixed and upgraded so it doesn't present a hazard, so we don't lose the building. But as it relates to anything else, elevators, sprinkler systems, etc., we really need to have a robust conversation about the potential for this building.
That's
yeah, I,
this is, I think you can consider it a stabilization of the building. It's sort of like if you have a hole in the roof, you've got to take care of that, even though there may be a bunch of other things that have to be done. Well, you fix the roof, and then you can let the building can stabilize. Otherwise, the weather's coming into it. And this is very similar in that you're stabilizing the building. After that, we don't know what's going to turn into a money pit. But the reality is, it's something we still have to do, regardless of how you look at it. You can't, there's no other way of looking at it. It's got to be done at some point.
Okay, I think we've had a sufficient conversation around this. I think we're at a stage where it will move forward, and we'll have more conversation and hopefully set something up to have additional conversation around this. Okay? Anything else?
No, just the official vote's 4-3 with one abstention.
No, I changed mine.
Yes, 4 in favor, 3 opposed, 1 abstention.
Yes.
Five. I apologize. Five.
Thank you.
What do you mean?
Five yes, 2 no, 1 abstention. That's the vote total.
Right.
That's why I want to get it out there, because we're all confused a little bit on vote totals. I want to make sure that for the record and the public that's listening that everything's right.
Thank you, Ken.
You're welcome.
Okay, and thanks, Don. Appreciate your time.
No, thank you.
Thanks, Don.
So resolution 146 is the approving the contract with Rising Ground Inc.
I'll move it.
Tracy.
Second.
Ken.
Tracy and I both moved it. So.
Okay. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Mary Beth? Oh, okay. Got it. Resolution 147, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 with Julia Dykeman Andrus Memorial Inc.
I'll move it. It's foster care.
Foster care.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 148, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of 50 with Gateway Community Industries.
Ken, a little bit.
Second?
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 149, approving the execution of a contract causing the aggregate contract amount to be in excess of 50.
In honor of Carl Belfilio, Ken Rodney, move it.
Okay, this is for Visual Computer Solutions, Inc. Ken moved it. Do I have a second?
April second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I'd like to finish it out just for the folks that don't have a copy of this before them.
I apologize.
That's quite all right.
I often jump the gun on you, legislator.
I know. You're always pushing us along, which is fine. Resolution 155, authorizing the chair of the legislature to terminate the agreement for professional service with the Research Foundation, State University of New York, through SUNY New Paltz Benjamin Center.
Can I move it?
I'll
second
it.
Any discussion? Eve?
I would like to understand a little bit more about this decision. I also noticed I didn't, and maybe I just missed it, I didn't see anything about what the original contract had said, but I guess I had would like to know a little bit more about why this was proposed.
Dave?
We've had several conversations with what they accomplished for us, and it was short of what we wanted and felt that we needed, and in fact our own staff was able to do somewhat of a better job. The other thing is, it was a 3-year contract, which we normally do not enter into. We normally enter into 1-year contracts that are renewable. And there was a change in leadership in the organization. And also, because of the COVID situation, we're going to need some people that comes in that has done thousands of these things, not two.
Tracy?
Just just speaking for myself, so Dave, I just want to echo what Dave said in terms of normally when these contracts go out, they're 1 year contracts with an opportunity for two opportunities to renew for a year. This was, it was, I think of it as an oversight, and by the time that we saw it, we couldn't change it without reletting the whole RFP. Given the current circumstance and the current state of what I expect our budget to be like, which is going to be unlike any budget I've ever seen, I would just like to relet the RFP. That means that the Benjamin Center can rebid too, but I'd like to have conversations with all the prospective analysts to talk to them about what they can offer and how their group could best position and help us work through this really difficult budget cycle. And I'm open to any opportunity. I've been through multiple of these RFP processes while sitting on Ways and Means. It happens in Ways and Means. And so our committee is the one who will do it. And again, so I'm going to keep an open mind, but I would just like to be able to have that conversation with a whole variety of organizations, in particular in relation to the budget crisis that I'm anticipating.
Ken?
Thanks. Question to Mark. You know, through the chair, obviously, if we were to go out to RFP, just to confirm, we're under no obligation to award to one of the companies, right? We could go out to RFP and decide we don't want to award to any of them?
Yes,
for the record. Thank you, Mark. That's one thing that I want to just put on the table here as well, that, you know, the county executive has sent out a memo, which we've all been in receipt of, to all county departments asking for a 10% reduction in spending, or a plan for 10% less for their departments. I gotta tell you, and I know that, you know, they both love hearing it. I think Amber and Natalie did a fantastic job last year during the budget process. I would say almost all of the amendments that we came up with were done by them and not our budget consultants. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that come August, you know, we would rather do it in-house this year and be able to save that money than hire one of the other companies as well. I think that's a definite possibility. So to me, that's another reason to cancel the contract while we have the opportunity to do so, and then figure out where we are in a couple of months. We may want to save that money as part of our contributing to saving money for the county as a whole. And really, I've been in the legislature now 12 and a half years, and we've never had a more competent financial staff to be able to do such a job. So I think that that's a definite possibility for us. I'm not saying that's the be-all end-all, and I definitely think that we should do the RFP, but you know, we might be in a position where we'd rather lean on our highly competent staff than to spend the $60,000 or $70,000.
Eve?
Okay, so for me to vote on this, I have to understand what it is. What is the reason? And I was given quite a few reasons, and some of them I'm okay with, and some of them I'm not. And so, you know, for in terms of it being a three-year contract, whether it was an oversight or not, it was a three-year contract. I will say that I personally had a three-year contract, so it's not the only time that has happened, but it was. And let me pause and say, yes, you probably all know that I worked for the Benjamin Center for many years, and I was part of it from the start. However, I had nothing to do with this particular project. I didn't get any money from it. I no longer work for the Benjamin Center, and I would no longer be a part of this project, or I would not. I was never part of the project, and I would. So I just want to clarify that. But if you're breaking a contract that was for 3 years, you would need a very good reason. I think that if the reason is because Jerry Benjamin has retired, he still is serving on the Benjamin Center, and so that's not a very good reason because he can still continue to do it. If the reason is because you think somebody who's more knowledgeable, I think the reason why you gave the RFP to Jerry Benjamin in the first place was because of all of his knowledge and experience, so I have trouble with that one. If you you're saying that given this time with the pandemic and we need to make a 10% cut and give and due to that this may not be an expense, then I actually am a little much more okay with that answer. And then I would say don't put it up for RFP. If we can't afford it, we can't afford it. But I really don't buy deciding that because Jerry Benjamin has retired, this three-year contract, if that's enough reason to breach a three-year contract. There has to be more reason. And I have not heard, and I know I'm new, but I haven't heard that there was such dissatisfaction with it prior to this pandemic.
Dave, and then Ken.
Well, basically the contract says, as a matter of convenience, we can cancel at any time. We do not have to give any reason for that matter. We aren't breaching anything. We don't, like I said, we do not need any reason to cancel this contract whatsoever. The reasoning is, yes, many people were upset with what the product was. It wasn't what we expected. And the reason they went with, and let me make a point, I have a great deal of respect for Jerry Benjamin, and when we were looking at it, I was not happy with it. I didn't really want to support it at that point, because that is not what their real expertise is, as far as I'm concerned. There are companies out there that do this all the time for various counties, and that's what their real specialty is. They know how to deal with these type of issues, and they come up with deliverables that we can use to make amendments to the budget. That did not happen. So I wasn't, you know, happy with the performance. I happen to like Jerry a great deal, and the reason I ended up actually putting me over to vote for that was because Jerry Benjamin was there full-time, all the time. He was putting in 5 days a week dealing with it. He is no longer doing that. I mean, the only reason I ended up going with it was because I didn't like the other ones. I really didn't like the performance in the end. And so as a result, I mean, that's just one item out of a many. And the idea that, yeah, we've had three-year contracts for certain things, but we've never done three-year contracts for the budget analysis. We've always had one-year renewables. That's what we always done. So we're not breaching any contract. We're simply canceling the contract. And they had the right to rebid it. When we put it out, we have Landis, we put in a great deal of time, along with Amber and Natalie, to put together a real comprehensive RFP, and we should go out with that RFP and see what happens, see what comes in with it. And we should actually, Ken said, we should consider maybe doing it in-house. I would have said, I would have agreed with him 100% if it wasn't for the problems we have right now. I'm concerned with how tough this budget's going to be, that we may need a little more expertise at this point. I mean, otherwise, I would feel, if this didn't happen, I was going to suggest that the idea that we did it in-house. I was going to go along with some other people that have been talking about that. Not everybody, a lot of people feel that no, they feel that we still need the full-time analysis coming in. And I'm leaning towards more doing the full-time analysis with an RFP, because just because of how difficult this budget's really going to be.
Ken?
Thanks. To that point, I think a point that Legislator Walter made, I don't know what we can afford until we go out to RFP. That's why I support going out to RFP, with the understanding that we don't have to hire somebody, is perhaps we're going to get a really good deal right now. Perhaps somebody's going to come in with an offer we can't refuse. And to Dave's point about the three-year contract, I think that one thing that made a lot of folks comfortable when we passed the three-year contract was the fact that all the county contracts have the escape clause. So we're able to have that termination clause. If we decide that we no longer want the service, we can give them the security of a multi-year contract, but the security for ourselves and the taxpayers that we have the opportunity to terminate said contract. So, I mean, to me, it's a lot of reasons. I was, you know, and again, you know, coming from a student of Dr. Benjamin, you know, I respect his experience in local government. I have his book, Regionalism and Realism, upstairs in my house. I took his local government class 2 years before I ran for the legislature. But, you know, this is a dollars and cents contract. It's not a policy necessarily. Yeah, it's not necessarily a policy contract. I've always believed that we should be engaging an accounting firm if we're going to do this. I thought that back then. I made that known back then. I've supported, you know, engaging the Benjamin Center and Dr. Benjamin in other, you know, capacities several times to do policy work for the county. I think the Benjamin Center's done a great job, but I was always in favor of an accounting firm doing the budget analysis because it's more dollars and cents, and I think that is what we're going to need moving forward if we hire a firm, and if we don't, we've got a very, very, very capable CPA and fiscal analyst here, both on this call right now, who are ignoring me because they don't like praise, but, you know, that can do that for us. I just think that, you know, there's a lot of reasons why terminating the contract now makes sense. With the possibility, as Dave said, that they, you know, if we rebid the contract, the Benjamin Center could be awarded it again. But this is the time when we would need to do this in order to meet our deadlines.
Okay, on the resolution, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So just Eve is opposing? Okay. Thank you. Next resolution, 156, authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute an amendment to the contract with the New York Department of Environmental Protection. This authorizes the chair any future amendments to the New York City Department of Environmental Protection. It's in the amount of $150,000 for watershed regulations.
Ken moves it.
Second? Tracy seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No opposed. Resolution 157, amending the 2020 Ulster County budget, the Department of Social Services. This is for payment of 2019-2020 contractual obligation for state, federal, and other grants in the amount of $196,796. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Oh, sorry.
And
then
I'll second it.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Resolution 158, amending the 2020 budget to accept an allocation of child abuse or neglect prevention and treatment, CAPTA, in the amount of $70,000. Move?
Move by Ken.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 159, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute intermunicipal agreements with the town of Saugerties, the village of Ellenville, to provide services of domestic violence investigations to Ulster County Family and Child Advocacy Center.
Move by Ken.
Second by Eve. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 160, amending the 2020 Ulster County budget to accept an allocation of funds from the National Center on Child Abuse and Neglect to enhance the Family Assessment Response Program. Move?
Tracy.
Ken.
Second? Ken. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 161, amending the 2020 Ulster County budget to accept an additional allocation of funds from New York State Office of Children and Family Services to continue safe harboring program. Move
by
Tracy. Tracy.
Second by Ken.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And Resolution 172, implementing a voluntary separation program for eligible Ulster County employees.
Did we just skip a whole bunch?
We just skipped several of them.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, 162.
Oh, sorry, I didn't turn the page. Thank you. Resolution 162, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County to execute an agreement with New York State Department of Transportation to accept New York State funds for Ulster and Dutchess County Public Transportation Link.
Moved by Tracy.
Second by Ken.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Resolution 163, authorizing chair of the legislature to execute a grant application with the Department of Justice Bureau of Justice Assistance Grant for the Comprehensive Opioid Stimulant and Substance Abuse Site-Based Program.
By Tracy.
Second by Ken.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 164, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a lease agreement with the town of Worsing for a substation of the Ulster County Sheriff's Office.
I'll move it. Eve.
Second?
Second by Ken.
Any questions? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 165, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement for the sharing of information relating to short-term rental properties with the town of Marlborough.
You will move.
Ken, I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 166, authorizing the conveyance of the county on properties to the original owners.
Margaret Tracy.
Tracy, second?
Second by Ken.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution 167, authorizing the conveyance of county on property to the original owners. Department of Finance.
Moved by Tracy.
Second by Ken.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, now we're at 172. Implementing a voluntary separation program for eligible Ulster County employees.
Move by Ken.
Second?
Tracy.
Okay, conversation? Yep, Ken?
Thanks, Lynn. I definitely think this is a worthwhile endeavor. It's going to be important for us to try and save every dime. I do have a concern that this resolution gives rather sweeping authority to the executive's office and has very little oversight by the legislature. I'm not prepared with amendments tonight, but I am considering them in a conceptual basis. I would like this to be postponed until next week's meeting. I'm happy to have any discussion anyone wants to have tonight, but it just came to us very recently, and I haven't had the opportunity to wrap my head completely around where I'd like to see us go with it. I keep thinking about everything in our budget by the three, pandemic adjustment periods in the governor's budget. I think that the county executive's office needs flexibility to be able to roll with the punches when it comes to these three periods, but the first two in particular I think are more important for them to have the maximum amount of flexibility. Without getting into specifics, because again, I've been just kicking it around in my mind, and I've had discussions with members of the executive's office, I almost feel like we should be giving the county executive a higher level of flexibility in the first two pandemic adjustments than in the third one. And, without even having, eked it all out in my own brain, I feel like we should allow him to offer it to anybody in the first two periods, so to the end of June, and then ask for some sort of a plan, even if it's a framework, for the third one, which would be July 1st until the end of the year. But again, this is not, it's not even completely formed in my mind on what I'd like. I wanted to put it out there that I think that we should be looking for a little bit more oversight from the legislature on this.
I'm definitely open to having that discussion, and certainly I think the week is reasonable. But you know, are we going to get Mark? Is someone here to be able to discuss the financial impacts of what this would mean if the maximum amount of people take it, or if the et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, Bert's on the line, but I think it's you know, the anticipation is that savings would be around $5 million. I, Kurt, if I'm speaking, you know, you'll correct me, but that it would be, you know, upwards of $5 million. The majority of the cost savings on this plan are going to come from the vacancy savings. We don't anticipate filling any of these vacancies, so even if someone in a role that's essential takes this, you know, incentive, we would fill it if we had to fill it internally, most likely.
Can I ask what's the age? The resolution doesn't say what the age cutoff is for eligibility. What
55, I believe.
Hey, Mark, 55 and yeah, so you have to. It's 55 and above, and depending on the bargaining unit, you have to either have 6 years in, I think, with CSEA, or 10 years in with many bargaining units.
Bert just said not necessarily. Bert, are you there still?
In terms of age 55, that's for most employees, but with the public safety employees, they can retire earlier.
Oh, right. PBA, sorry.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm interested in the cost, in the potential cost, just so we have all the information of if someone does take that retirement earlier. Yes, there's a savings in their vacancy, but we're also not providing the service that or fulfilling the job that person was doing. And what's the additional cost over the course of the next 55 and 7 years? But for someone who retires earlier, it could be, I mean, what's the earliest in the public safety? Can they retire at what?
50.
So that could be 12 years of, you know, 25, an extra 25% of their healthcare, which could have a long-term impact. Again, I just want to understand the numbers. I agree with Ken that this is a good idea, and we have to do what we have to do. But I'd like to understand the numbers, and I'm willing to have the conversations about oversight as well, Ken.
So if I could, Bert, I think you prepped this one-page sheet for us, which was put in the OneDrive late, just before the meeting, which I think everybody may want to take a look at, where it starts to. Pardon me?
Can Jay pop it on the screen?
I don't know. Can you, Jay?
She just gave a thumbs up.
And
there we go. Let's do it. Technology.
The biggest thing when it comes to estimating this, we really don't know, especially with these economic times, what people's personal financial, you know, health is. We can only guesstimate as to who may leave. You know, and unfortunately, I don't have a crystal ball on any of this. It is, you know, as Mark said, our role is to, you know, hopefully not fill the positions, but I also think we need to move folks into departments. Let's say people leave social services. We can move people within to enhance our funding from other sources, too. So that's something to keep in mind as well.
Well, and maybe, Bert, you can walk us through, once Jade puts it up, I'll let you know, what you've put together so we understand what we're looking at. Which are really estimated costs on what the actual county health insurance may be based on your current claim condition, correct?
That's the biggest estimate, because as you all know, health insurance, we're self-insured. So the kind of estimate that I have for health insurance costs is based on just that, an estimate of our claims. Also, in terms terms of the estimate, the additional cost there on the retiree, that's what the incentive kind of would pay for. Your biggest savings is not filling those positions.
And is this an additional cost, the retirement incentive? Is that's additional county cost every year that they're using?
Correct.
Correct?
Yes. Yeah.
So can everyone see this?
And I will say, you know, I use non-Medicare eligible because, you know, it gets complicated once they become Medicare eligible, because then we provide a supplemental insurance instead of the kind of full health insurance coverage we provide now.
So are you saying that this retirement incentive would go away once they become Medicare eligible?
No, it's just a different insurance, Lynn, that would be less costly to the county.
And we're paying it already?
It's kind of a co-insurance, right?
Yeah, it's
right.
A supplemental insurance to Medicare.
Yeah.
Are we paying that currently?
For anyone over 65 retired, correct.
But so, not for these employees. That's what he's saying.
Right.
Correct.
But
yeah.
When they become Medicare eligible, they would be covered.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Regardless of the incentive, they would be covered.
Exactly.
Correct.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it would be a cheaper overall cost to the county once they become Medicare eligible. That goes for anybody.
Yeah, that goes
down. Okay, I'm sorry, I can't see. Eve, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I'm just curious. So for salary, are you picking, is that an average of people who are within that age of that level, or?
No, I just picked a grade 13 civil service employee, because that's kind of middle of the road grades within the civil service bargaining unit. And then I also picked a manager who is eligible to retire.
Okay, because I mean, in my experience with these kinds of things, and I was involved in something like this for Albany, that, you know, usually those people who would retire are on the highest level of the salary. So.
And that's what they are. They're on the highest step range of that grade.
Right.
But are you saying that the bulk of the people fall into this grade level that would be eligible?
No, it's just a matter of, I just picked a grade 13 in the middle of the salary structure for CSCA. In terms of the eligibility, they're all over the grades of CSCA.
And how many people does this target?
Well, in terms of, here's the we have over 300 employees who are age eligible. I hate to say that, but that's what they are. The problem we have is we don't know how many years of service they have with New York State. I know how many years they have with the county. We have roughly 180 of those who are eligible to retire.
So 180 of the 300, but it could be more once you add state credit.
Yeah, there could be folks that need, you know, a few years of service. They may have had it somewhere else. I wouldn't know.
Can I just add one thing, Linda?
Yes.
So, I mean, basically, if this resolution were approved, we would send out information to our department heads, who would then kind of survey their employees, the eligible ones who could possibly retire on this, find out the interest. If they then were interested, they come back and we would make a final determination, and then if we agreed, we would send out the confirmation letter. If somebody was in a position where they were going to, you know, it was going to be very much upside down because they were 55 and on that $11,000 a year, you know, I think it would be unlikely that we would move forward with that incentive. But we have the ability to say yes or no throughout this process.
Ken?
Thanks. You know, Mark, you wouldn't be sending them all out at once, though, right? I mean, this resolution gives the executive's office the ability to send them out on a rolling basis at any point during the calendar year.
Correct. And we would people eligible that didn't meet that requirement, we would continue to offer it, but it would be at a kind of a lower percentage. It wouldn't be at the 75% or the
entire right, it's a maximum of 25% added or a maximum of 10% added.
Right.
Correct.
Any other questions? Can you have a postponement? Did you?
I make a motion we postpone this until next week's meeting.
It gives everybody a time to digest, look at these numbers, ask whatever questions. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
All in favor of postponement until next week?
Aye.
Opposed?
Lynn, before we adjourn, because I know we're getting close, I just want to, you know, on behalf of my caucus, thank Bert for all his hard work. He's probably got one of the top five worst jobs in the county right now, with the budget gap that we have, and you know, I think he does a great job. So I just, you know, while he's on the meeting here with us, you know, he's up at the county, you know, every day, and I just, you know, appreciate him and want to extend that.
Thanks, Ken, and I will say I've been nicknamed Doom and Gloom now, so it's all right.
Thank you, somebody Bert. Needs to set the tone, right, Bert?
That's it.
All right. Again, all of the one of the things that I did want to bring up is in the One Tribe, if you have not had a chance to look at this is the first quarter that the finance team, our finance team, has put out quarterly reports of kind of showing what the run rate has been for the various departments. I encourage you to take a look at it. They're available for all the departments and all the standing committees. We've seen monthly in and out budget amendments, but take a look at this quarterly report. We'd like feedback if find it valuable. I think particularly now, the closer we stay to the numbers, what's being expended, what's coming in, the better off we will be. And we're looking for it. We met with Bert, Ken and I, and we're partnering with Bert just to ensure we're not lagging in our understanding of what's happening in this very difficult time. So I think it's going to require all of us to pay close attention, and if anything comes up or if there's any feedback, it's much appreciated. So I think, you know, working together, it's going to be, we're going to have a tough year. So I look forward to working with all of you on this.
Same here.
Any other questions? Trace, did you have something? No. Okay, everyone, thank you. I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.